The Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly is brought to you by Mop Squad. Look, nobody likes to be rejected, especially for an H-1B visa. If you're unsuccessful in the upcoming H-1B lottery, our friends at Mop Squad have a solution for you. They can help you stay in North America and continue supporting your current company from Canada. They can obtain a Canadian work permit and relocate you and your family in just 4 weeks. Get in touch at mobsquad.io/blindambition. That's mobsquad.io/blindambition.
It's Jack Kelly with your buddy Rick Chen. And today we're going to do something a little different, a little interesting. We've made about, 150 episodes, Rick? Is that?
Just about, right?
Like a crazy amount. And you know what? Believe it or not, we like being behind the scenes a little bit, and we like fostering and showcasing our guests. But I think it makes sense every once in a while to say, hey, like, who are we? Like, who are these guys who are hosting it? And so today I want to talk about Rick Chen, and just find out everything to know about Rick and what's going on and what he's doing at Blind. So maybe we could start out, Rick. What do you do as a PR person at Blind? And maybe for people who aren't familiar with Blind, to tell what's the company all about and what goes on there and why people should join.
Blind is a professional community of more than 10 million verified professionals worldwide at hundreds of thousands of companies. These are companies that you've all heard of. So think Google, Amazon, Samsung, and the like there. And my job as the head of public relations at the company is, I almost kind of have two roles, where one is I'm the company spokesperson. So anytime we're in the press, I'm directly working with reporters, sharing the executive, the company's opinion and perspective on things that are going on in the industry or current events. And the second part related to that is I'm also a bit of the chief journalist. My background is in journalism. So I'm looking at interesting trends and themes that are being discussed on Blind or that our community might have an opinion on. So if you've seen an in-app survey, that's me behind the scenes setting it up to share it with you and eventually, you know, share it with reporters about what, verified professionals think about different things.
Is there a reason why people should sign up? You know, so for someone who's not familiar with this, what can they benefit from joining up?
What's really interesting about Blind versus other social media or even just a plain old online forum on a website is that Blind, we actually verify your employment when you sign up. And so you can't self-identify as a doctor or as a lawyer. You can't say, hey, you know, I work at Google like you might on other websites. Where on sign up, we actually ask you to sign up with a work email address. And that's how we use to verify your current employer. After you sign up, we actually destroy your email address. And so if you forget your password, good luck. We can't send you a forget password link in an email because we don't have that information. And the reason why we take that extra step is we want to be anonymous. Now, if you think about any kind of workplace, there's a lot of interpersonal politics going on in terms of, I can't really say this because my manager might think I'm stupid or my manager might retaliate against me later. And we want to prevent those communication silos. You know, our mission is to bring transparency to the workplace. Part of that is being able to speak freely about anyone or anything. And so if you go on Blind, probably one of the most popular themes of discussion is compensation. Nearly every culture, money is a taboo, and that really doesn't serve professionals or employees well. It gives the power to employer underpay people or just not be as forthcoming as what is a bonus or how does stock-based compensation work. Or on Blind, that anonymity, you're able to ask those questions, find out the latest job offers, and hopefully get what you deserve.
What made you decide to go into PR? Because that seems like when you're a kid, right? You're like, I'm going to be a cowboy. I'm going to be an astronaut. I'm going to be whatever. But like, I don't think, did you grow up say, hey, I want to be a PR person? Or how did this all play out?
Absolutely not. If you ask my mom what I wanted to be when I grew up, I actually wanted to be a firefighter. And my logic was, I can turn on the siren and everyone has to get out of my way. Meanwhile, 30 years later, I'm nowhere fit enough to be a firefighter. I don't drive, so just having folks get out of the way doesn't really help me. And so I had to realize, you know, I actually have to do something. And one thing that I've always been fairly good at throughout my career is communication. So I am the annoying guy at a party that manages to talk to everyone and find at least one thing in common with folks. I've decided, hey, how can I actually parlay this into a full-fledged career? I actually went to law school as an undergrad at Berkeley because I wanted to explore becoming a lawyer, but working those hours and working at a law firm kind of wisened me up very quickly. And so basically what happened is I worked at the lobbying firm in politics out of college, actually in communications, writing speeches, writing that copy that you get in those like annoying yes on A flyers that get sent to you in the mail.
What's an A flyer?
Those propositions, you know, where it's like, oh, yes on A.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
For this judge, I used to write that copy or organizing folks to go to City Hall. And I would actually write bullet points and hand them out before people went up to the podium so that they could know what to say. And from there, I realized, hey, I'm actually pretty good at this communications thing. Let's actually kind of parlay this into working as a journalist and working in PR.
So you just enjoyed the fact of like taking schmoozing to the next level and get paid for it, right? That's not too bad to make a living, right? Yeah.
That's exactly right. And the fun part is, I also get paid to teach other people how to schmooze and glad hand and be a better speaker confidently, right? So a lot of what my job, you know, folks think I'm mostly external, picking up the phone, calling reporters, but a lot of what I do as a communications person or any comms executive is working with the executives or your principals inside a certain company and training them up, whether it's teaching them how to speak on certain topics, or how to even talk to reporters, or, you know, preparing those slides at a conference that a CEO has to present.
That got to be a tough, stressful job because, you know, you always see in the news, like something goes terribly awry, you know, some like scandal, some issue, what have you. And I imagine someone like yourself in PR and communications, is dumped in your lap. Like, how did you let that happen, Rick? Why didn't you prepare? Is that a drawback of it, or that's kind of part of the excitement? It's part of the game.
I think it's part of the game. I mean, my background was in politics, which I would almost compare it analogous. And this isn't me being too full of myself, but it's very similar to being a professional athlete in the sense that everyone is watching you. They know the score. And, you know, we talk about Monday chairback quarterbacks, right? Where everyone is suddenly an expert on what happened on Sunday and they're critiquing the quarterback's play. Well, they have the hindsight in not being in the field, so to speak. Politics and PR is the same way, where if you say something silly or if something doesn't go right, the media, folks on social media, they're going to dissect it. When I was working in lobbying and I did a lot of political fundraising, I knew the day after election day, whether all of my work for the past few months had been in vain or not, if my candidate lost, then, you know, there's a part of me that said, maybe I should have done one extra thing or something more. I think PR is a bit of that. It's certainly been compounded by kind of the advent of social media. And, you know, blind is certainly a part of that in terms of making these things that we would keep internally or that you would only know about if you worked in a certain company or certain industry, suddenly it's open and available for the public to see.
You know, this makes a strong argument for people to how to navigate their career, because it seems like when you were a young kid, you were kidding around kid in class, right? The class clown. And fast forward, the skills you learned, even though you weren't purposely doing it, but it sounds like the skills you learned as a young kid, as a young little Ricky growing up, actually worked for when you got older, so that you didn't even probably realize it, but then you started building that toolbox. And so then you're like, wait a minute, I've years and years and years of knowing how to just what to say, what not to say, how to kind of get your point across, how to say it politely, which by the time you're a young adult, you're like, I have this really unique skill set that other people don't have. And then you found your calling from politics to communications. I think for people who are watching this now, they tend to see what they were like when they were younger and just dismiss it. But a lot of times, I think if you look back and you see, you know, what were you good at? Like what's like innately that just you did without effort? And for some reason, we feel if we could do it without effort, then I shouldn't do it. Wow, this is too easy. It's something wrong. But oftentimes, just get involved and just run with it because you have something that other people don't have. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. And I wholeheartedly agree. As a kid, I was the type of person where you tell me one thing and I'm going to test your limit and I'm going to figure out exactly how I can get up to that line and maybe cross a few couple times without you noticing. And then over time, see how I can kind of push that line. My mom, she, bless her heart, she used to get so frustrated with me as a kid. She would tell me when I was around high school, Rick, maybe you want to consider being a lawyer because lawyers, they read the rules, they read the law, they interpret it. And a lot of things in life, they're not black and white. It's all about interpretation. And that's exactly what being a lawyer is like. You're the guy that's good at finding loopholes or testing limits. That's exactly what being a lawyer is. And maybe you want to consider being a lawyer. You have this natural sense for it already. Other folks, it might just take them longer or they have to put in a bit more effort. But fast forward today, it's the same thing with communications and PR, where there's certain things that, you know, folks often do or teach others to do in communications, kind of like the classic example is bridging, right? When you get a question or have to speak to a topic that you might not necessarily want to discuss, you acknowledge that question or topic, and then you bridge to something related where you do want to talk about it. And so for some folks, they actually have to have a communications person teach them how to do that. And they have to put in the reps to be able to do it naturally. For me, you know, I was the kid that was getting in trouble all the time. Of course, I wanted to switch the subject.
You know what I noticed about you, Rick? And I think I have this too, where in addition to what you're talking about, you know, being able to communicate well and push the boundaries, but we all encounter some people who they're just difficult to deal with, right? And they're always argumentative. But I noticed about you, you won't be like that. Like, even if you're like irritated, now maybe I'm wrong, and like in your personal life that I don't see, you may push and push and push, but then you give a little smile, a little laugh, and all of a sudden it's all cool, it's all smooth, which is another kind of innate type of thing that if you could, you know, really build on that, is a really good superpower, because then it makes you're able to say these things to people, but not have them take offense and actually think of you as like, oh, all right, it's rare, I get it. Yeah, it's okay, right? It's a thing. So this is what I like also when we do these podcasts, because you could get these like nuggets out, and for people who are trying to navigate their careers and figure out what to do, sometimes, think of what you're good at, what you do. All right, maybe you didn't go to law, but like, okay, now you're doing this in the communications field.
I think that's exactly right. For example, negotiation seems like a very challenging skill. When you think of that skill, you think of high-level executives in these fancy boardrooms, and they're arguing over high stakes, like $1 million, $1 billion deals, sales contracts, and that kind of thing. But actually, negotiation is something that most people do in everyday life, including communications. You and I were speaking with one another, and behind the scenes, we don't realize it, but we're actually negotiating how we're speaking, right? So right now you're speaking, I'm trying to figure out, is your point done? Or are you asking a question and can I jump in and answer? So we're doing this, but it's behind the scenes. And a lot of folks, they do this even when they're driving, right? Where you're driving down the lane and you see someone's blinker go on and they want to get into your lane, you and that other driver, you're actually negotiating in real time in terms of the physical proximity of the physical space that you're taking up. So I think of these little things that actually build up into these larger skills. You don't all of a sudden become that executive that negotiates a multi-billion dollar deal without having to negotiate or put in the reps in on other little things in life. Now, you and I having this conversation, or, you know, someone driving to the grocery store and figuring out if they want to, you know, let someone cut into their lane. It's a bit low stakes negotiation, admittedly. We all have these skills that build up, and it's all about the effort that we're willing to put in to build further, or where you might recognize, hey, actually, you know, by pure luck or innate skill, I seem to have a head start in one skill over the other. And I want to invest more time and actually develop, you know, you and I, we've spoken to a bunch of CTOs and founders that were gifted mathematically as a kid. And they knew that they wanted to code and program as a little kid because they were playing with computer programs, you know, on their family's first computer when they were 7 or 8. And they invested over time, you know, went to university, did these side projects, and, you know, eventually came to run these, you know, multi-billion dollar companies. Mm-hmm. And it's something that they were blessed to have discovered early. And, you know, I kept getting the same feedback in school. Rick's doing great, but he's distracting others, or he's distracting the class. And realized what my teachers at the time were calling maybe a weakness or an area for improvement, and really hone in on how to use that energy in the right way.
Well, how do you do that? So then how do you do, like, fast forward from going out of school to like Gusto or some of the other Credit Karma and some of the other organizations, so that you can still do it without alienating people and being, you know, instead of the teacher, the boss and others that you're, well, how did you then navigate those channels and be successful in those areas?
Part of it is just understanding where I wanted to focus and invest my time. Early on, my father taught me a lot of the advice you get out there is to identify your weaknesses, focus there and build it up. And he gave me the advice or the observation that you want to do the exact opposite, where if you're just spending all your time focusing on these weaknesses and getting it to a point where it's just okay, at the end, you're just an average okay person. But if you find out over time that you spike in one or two skills, focus all your time there and build it to a point where you're the industry leader or you're the one that everyone knows in town for being good at something. And that's where you want to have these asymmetrical advantages for yourself. And so I think now, fast forward, I've since learned that what he was describing to me is, you know, called the T in terms of building the skills. You want to be able to go horizontal and have an understanding of many different topics or many different skills, but you want to go really deep on just a handful. And that's what I learned when I went to high school. I did mock trial because I wanted to figure out if I wanted to do the law route. And I found myself loving being able to think on my feet. I was finding myself finding very weird things to object to in a courtroom and getting those wins, getting that affirmation, getting that real-time feedback and saying, hey, I'm getting somewhere with this. So I just really focused in on this and say, it seems like everyone my entire life has been saying, I communicate too much or I can communicate too well or whatnot. So perhaps this is clear for me rather than getting into the nitty-gritty of looking at commas in a contract or something like that.
So then how did it play out when, let's say, Gusto, for example,
yep,
were you able to use what you were just talking about, all those skills, you know, the T, thing?
I think one thing that's been interesting specific about me is try to take a childlike approach to everything in terms of like joy, in terms of humility. I worked at a lobbying firm as my first quote-unquote real job out of college. And I went to the president of that firm and said, hey, I know usually folks that get into lobbying, they've worked as a legislative aide or they've worked as the elected official themselves. And then they get into lobbying because they've already established those relationships. And I know I'm 21, I'm 22. I have zero political capital, zero social capital. I will do anything and everything. I just want to learn. There is no work that is beneath me. And so I told them, I know fundraising is a big part of politics. I'm not going to be a registered lobbyist. I know the law. I can actually do the fundraising. And so now you have this arm of your lobbying firm that's separate, but that's your competitive advantage. And I will do everything. I will call the vendors to negotiate a price. I will staff and collect checks. I will dial for dollars. I will go to, you know, the bars or the restaurants and get people water and drinks. Like, I'm willing to learn. I want that front seat. And I'll take like a low paycheck to do so. Because, you know, I'm thinking it's all about building the reps. And eventually, once I develop the skills or the network, the compensation or the raises or the title will come later. But I was more focused on like, put me in, coach. And that lobbying president said, sure.
Now, was a part of it that you really were in love or really supporting whatever cause it was? Was that part of it? Or it really was, you just loved the flow, the everything around it, getting involved?
Yeah, when I was in college, I went in thinking I was going to go to law school. I went to a high school that had a law academy. I was fairly determined. Well, my mom told me I was annoying. And if you're that annoying about different letters and words, perhaps being an attorney would be right for you. I went to college and I soon found out, gosh, like I'm taking these law classes and political science courses and actually find myself liking the political science courses a bit more. I got involved in a political club. Through that, I got recruited to work at a lobbying firm over a summer. This seems more interesting to me. It's a bit more exciting, dynamic. I love that there's no standard day. Truly anything can happen. Same as with PR. You know, I woke up this morning not knowing what emails are going to come into my inbox or some fire that might happen. You know, with a company doing a layoff and folks talking about it online, developed those like communication skills. And I did the same thing. I moved into tech and worked at Credit Karma as one of the first 90 employees. And I said, put me in, same exact approach. I'm moving into the tech industry. I don't really care about the compensation. So my first job, I was actually working with the customer service team and helping them figure out scripts because they were getting the same type of inquiry over and over and over again by email, try to figure out how to automate this. So this is before AI, and I was literally writing those canned responses before being trusted to speak with reporters, something that I hadn't done previously. By the time I worked at Gusto, the founders at Gusto were just so purposeful and careful with words, and they're so invested. See the value in PR and communications. The stars aligned, and when I went there, we can geek out about a press release and really think about the right verb to use, and I loved it there.
So wild. And then there's another company there, Metro Mile.
That's exactly it, Metro Mile.
Same thing, were you doing the same work over there as well?
My plan all along, I was literally the lowest person on the title, on the ladder. My title didn't exist. I did odd bits and ends. Eventually, I parlayed that into a PR team. I just did all the odd bits and ends that no one on the PR team wanted to do. Over time, I was able to come into that role as a new hire with kind of that respect. When I went to Metromile, I got that next position up where I finally became a director and got to run my own program and budget. And then that company eventually became a public company. So I started working in investor relations and added that tool to my tool belt. Fast forward today, I'm the head of the actual function, a worldwide company. And so all of these things kind of built over time, but it started with just having the humility of the kid and saying, hey, nothing's beneath me. I don't know any better. I'm going to try to have childlike appreciation of having no baggage and just coming into, I'm going to learn as heck to figure out everything in this industry or everything in your company, build on top of that.
See, I love that. As I mentioned before, it really sets a path and a way to view your career. Because I think what happens, particularly I notice Gen Zs, and I love Gen Zs because my two kids are Gen Zs. So when I put that out there, I'm not one of these guys who are like, oh, no, you don't want to work, you're Gen Zs. That's not the case. But I think what happens is that you feel sometimes they're unrealistic expectations where you're going to go into a job and then all of a sudden they're going to give you the juicy assignments. You're going to get that promotion right away. You're going to get all the accolades. And then they really hit hard when they realize, whoa, nothing has happened. This kind of sucks. I think you go back to first principles like you were talking about. One of the things I'm taking away from your story is this. One is that if you could find something when you're younger and you're really good at, don't dismiss it and say, instead, just embrace, say, wait, you know, I'm kind of a good schmoozer. I'm good at making friends. I'm good at, you know, bringing people together, and say, oh, all right, those are skills. Somehow in our society, Rick, right? Doesn't feel this way. You're brainwashed into like, no, those, don't think about those skills. You need to do the other skills. But then the more people get in the corporate world, you realize the softer skills, the communication skills, you know, the network is, those are so critical. So maybe instead of ignoring what you're really good at, say, okay, I'm really good at asking questions and creating camaraderie and knowing when to push, when to pull back, and then follow your passion. I know it sounds like, you know, cliche, but feeling, hey, this is what I feel good about. And then even if it's a junky, crappy job, go for a job. That's okay, because you're learning, and just suck it up and then learn it, do well, then get to the next level. And it seems like you just kept piggybacking yourself up, you know, to higher level jobs, higher, you know, becoming a director, getting a company that went public, all that kind of stuff. And now global, you know, organization. There's this trajectory that because you're working to your strengths and not, as you mentioned before, not like, oh, how can I fix my weaknesses? F the weaknesses. Just let's focus on what I'm really good at and just run with it and make it happen. And it seems to me from speaking with you a lot that you really love what you do and you really enjoy what you do and you take a lot from it. And I think that's a byproduct for doing things that you innately are drawn to and you like it and you're good at. It's almost like when you do that Venn diagram, what you're good at, what you can make money at, what you enjoy, what you can make a living at. And that when you hit that center, that's the sweet spot, because that's when, like, all right, it just flows and it's good and it works. Doesn't mean every day is going to be great, but more often than not, right, it's good. It seems that's the trajectory you made, and you seem to be enjoying yourself very much and doing really well.
I like to think so. And I like to think, you know, following your passion, it's a good idea. For me, I took it to heart as it's going to get me through the scut work. When I worked at a law firm as an intern, one of my first jobs was looking at cell phone policy brochures of the different plans for the last 5 or 10 years. And I was literally reading out the fine print at the back, because the lawyer wanted to figure out exactly what time, like literally the exact date, clause changed. And so imagine we're in this conference room. I have all these brochures in front of me. I'm reading out loud, this plan, colon, word, 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 right? And when you're in that moment, you think, gosh, is this really what being a lawyer is like, having that much attention to detail? Maybe it's not for me, but I'm going to keep going through, because maybe there's something, there's a light at the tunnel that I'm not seeing, or maybe this is the input into a fabulous output that I'm not privy to, or that I don't know about until later. So I'm going to keep going through and kind of persevere, but really builds up, and you have to do little work before, build that trust, build that network, build that social capital. That's what kept me going on through the nights, right? I eventually figured out I'm not going to optimize for like short-term things like compensation or even work-life balance at that stage. I'm 22, single. I don't really have anything going for me anyway. I might as well just try to build it. It's okay if at that time my social network is just the folks that I work with. I'll make up for it later. And so kind of almost have that like delayed gratification or willingness to invest in yourself seem to have paid off, at least for me.
Yeah, that's definitely another big key element, is deferred gratification. A lot of people want everything now, and that right. If you don't get it now, and you see that with people just quitting jobs so quickly because, all right, I'm not getting everything right now. And maybe sometimes you do need to leave, but a lot of times you're leaving too soon because you just don't want to delay the gratification that, like, all right, I got to put the time and effort to learn this trade, this craft. Let me just ask two last questions. And this is the things that you always ask the guests. Was there any promotion that really resonated, that kind of took you to that next level? And the second part is, anybody who was like a mentor or coach or somebody who really made a big difference in your work trajectory?
Both could be answered by my time at Credit Karma. I look back at that time very fondly. I was there for almost 5 years. In that time span, the company went from fewer than 90 people to over 1,000 working in 3 countries worldwide. By the time I left, it was like a $4 billion valuation. And so seeing all of that happen was pretty amazing. The company at the time, they sent out company-wide emails because it was small enough. When a new person joined, they hired the director of public relations, and her bio was amazing. She worked at Honda. She worked at Tesla with Elon Musk. And at the time, I didn't know who Elon Musk was, but I thought, wow, you work at car companies your entire life. That's pretty cool. Very high profile, big name companies. And so on her first day, I sent her an email. I literally responded to that email. Hey, my name is Rick. I've been at the company at that time for a year. I know consumer credit, credit cards, Credit Karma, like the back of my hand. In your first week, do you want me to walk through these things with you? I can also share some tips and tricks about certain people and navigating certain processes because I want to learn from you. I want to figure out how you got into PR, and I will do anything and everything. Can you imagine on your first day, you get this, you know, 23-year-old kid sending you this email and you're just figuring out how to, like, you know, work with IT to get your laptop set up. And so she instantly replied back and said, sure, lunch tomorrow. And we had lunch, and I told her the exact same things. I want to explore communication. What is it like working with a reporter? What is it like working with these executives? What do you exactly do? Anything that you don't want to do, I will learn and try to figure out. And so having that kind of confidence and that humility to say, I don't know anything. You certainly know a lot more for me. I'm willing to learn. Because I think one of the things that people don't realize, folks, even those that are very senior, they want to give back because there was someone that was a mentor to them. And they continue that cycle along and be that resource to someone else. You just have to give something up front. And be very clear about your ask rather than saying like, oh, when you have the time, can you reach out to me? No, just say exactly what you want to do or what you want. You'll often get the response. And over time, that 4.5 years, that director, she ended up leaving for another company. She went on maternity leave. I was basically the most junior person on my own. I hadn't written a press release by myself. And that was one of the things that I had to do. No one was going to help me because there was no PR team. It was just me. What I did was at night, I basically went to all the press room pages of all these different companies, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, United Airlines, Coca-Cola. And I just sat there for hours every single day reading press releases and figuring out what is the format? What is the structure? How can I write this? What words are they using? You know, not plagiarizing, but figuring out there's typically a format, right? And there's typically an outline, and kind of reverse engineering the long way what that press release would look like. And then writing it on my own. And then doing the pitching, reaching out to the reporters, getting that press coverage. And then that's how I earned my first like major promotion to become a manager of PR because I did that work and I had to do it on my own. And so that kind of validation of, oh, wow, you know, it was really hard and I had to do things the hard way, but it paid off, gave me that confidence to eventually go to Gusto, where I was able to come in as a new hire and have that respect built in. We hired you. I interviewed you. And just having that trust right off the bat and having that network was very powerful.
That's awesome. That's you know, I love, it's something called like you have to ask for the order in sales. Like in recruiting or sales, is ask for the order, where that's where people stumble. They just don't go for it. And so you went for it. You're like, you know what? Let me just go for it. And let me say, hey, I have all these this particular skill set. You may not be aware of it. Here's how I could help you, but I'd love you to help me. And most people would not do that. They'd be too afraid. They'd be intimidated. But yeah, you got to do that. You got to ask. And if they say no, like, okay, maybe another time. And that becomes another superpower too, because then you get the thick skin. If someone says yes, I'll take you under my wing. Great. If not, you move on, try somebody else. That's another lesson to be learned. Just go for it. Don't be shy. Unfortunately, in this world, very few people are going to help you out. It's going to be on your own. You're going to have to make your own brick. I hate to be that guy, but it's like that. You just got to be bold. And you were bold. That was cool, man. That was really good. But then also getting in the weeds and not thinking you're too above it, whether it's going through the minutiae of a contract or just looking at all these different PR pitches to figure out what the hell am I supposed to do? How am I going to figure this out? And how do I make it my own style? So that's a good combination to have.
I think it's about kind of the through line in my career, I would say, is just demonstrating grit and kind of putting yourself out there, right? And having that humility to say, I don't know the things that I don't know, and people are going to tell me no, and I'm okay with that because I'll just move on and try to find my next opportunity. There's just a lot of noise. Like even today, my LinkedIn and my Twitter, every day there's different folks that are reaching out to me and say, hey, I want to go in PR, or I see you worked at a lobbying firm. How did you get into a lobbying firm outside of college? And a lot of it, candidly, it's a lot of noise because they say, hey, when you're able, can you do this? But the folks that I actually respond to are saying, I'm going to be in town, downtown, next Thursday. Do you have time for a call? And they actually, to your point, assume the sale, and make it very easy for me to respond. I want to pass it forward and say, yeah, just make it easy when you haven't asked. Even if you're reaching out to a CEO or an executive at a huge name company, they probably do actually read their emails. I think you don't realize, but the busier someone is, it seems like the faster they respond to email. And kind of taking advantage of that psychological trick and saying, hey, I'm going to make it easy for you to help me. I'm going to put my one question. And when it's late at night and you can't sleep, maybe I'll get that answer. Or they happen to be in town tomorrow and they'll say, hey, lunch tomorrow. And you just go and drop everything and you go and do it.
I love it. I love your story. I love how you walked everyone through it. And I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoy doing this podcast and watching this. And I think for people who have never seen it before, this might be the first time, you know, by walking through your whole career arc, it's not just about your journey. It's the way people could then pick up tips and ideas. You know, we have like 150 different episodes. After a while, if you watch, if you keep seeing different people talking, you keep learning and growing. So, oh, wow. And you start putting together if you're not sure what to do yourself. I think that's the big value. But what we're doing is something different. You know, we're telling a story about like how people could succeed, but then how you could succeed by mirroring what other folks are doing and have done it and learn from them. It's not often where you could do something people, you know, improve their lives and their career, make more money and more opportunity and more growth. And that's a phenomenal thing to do.
Yeah, I'm the king of weird analogies, so I'll offer this one up. Just imagine, you know, we don't have the answers. Well, we'll be the first ones to admit that, Jack and I. But think of this podcast almost like a buffet. We're just throwing up different trays and dishes, and you're building your plate, and you can pass on some trays and just take a little bits of others. But I think if you look at the kind of whole collection of work, there's probably something that you can learn from everyone. And that's a lesson that you can probably take to the rest of your life. There's probably something that you can learn from everyone. And you just can pick and choose what you want to learn and what you want to build or what you think is interesting. And over time, that kind of helps you forward.
That's great. Better. Thanks for sharing. This is very enlightening. I love it.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.